Radio. This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Cat lovers and feline friends, it's time for Adele Park's Quirky Catnips.
Today on Quirky Catnips, we're airing a chapter of Quirky Cat Goes Splat by Adele Park. This frightfully funny tale is narrated by the ever-so-snarky Skitters the Cat. Find out what happens when Skitters goes cattywampus for a kitten named Harriet. Tune in each week to hear a new chapter of Quirky Cat Goes Splat, only on Pet Life Radio. Meow, kitties!
Audio recording St. George presents Quirky Cat Goes Splat. Written, produced, and edited by Adele Park. Narrated by a full cast.
Splat!
Meow, bitches.
Twisted Tales by Skitters the Cat. Part 9.
The cats in Naval are so drearily domesticated, they may as well be dogs. I'm in town quite frequently, as my humans have grown accustomed to having me load myself into whatever mode of transportation is being used for the day. I like to make the rounds in Naval, though the felines I run into are hopelessly humdrum. As a result, most of my friends are dogs. You'd think big dogs would intimidate a relatively small animal like a cat, but in my experience, just the opposite is true. Little dogs, on the other hand, would tear a strip of flesh off me in a heartbeat if they weren't so dumb. Most of their energy is spent spastically barking and running around in circles. If these yappy bitches would take a breath already, they might actually score a bite or two. My best friend in Naval is named Grundle. He's a big, lumbering Rottweiler with droopy jowls overrunning with thick, gooey spittle. He came to my rescue during an outing in Central Park in which a duo of angry Shih Tzus were trying to turn my tail into a rawhide chew toy. Grundle bounded over, not so much from a desire to save my ass, but to lick it. We've been pals ever since. For a while, I had a thing for a Siamese residing in a fake Cape Cod on Petal Street. Like the house she was living in, this fickle feline was out of place in a town like Naval. Our relationship was so inauthentic, I don't think she even noticed when Grundle started paying more attention to her than I did. Things were different with Harriet. From the moment I saw Harriet shaking her tangy orange booty around Legacy Grove, I was a romantic goner. Love at first sight isn't all it's cracked up to be. It slams you upside the head and turns your brain into silly putty. Harriet sets off a case of jitters that has me thinking, you've got to be kidding me. Apparently, I resort to bad puns when in the throes of love. Scotty Sphincter probably doesn't think he has anything in common with a creature like me, but he obviously drank the same love potion I did. I may say a few foolish things or even behave clumsily when I'm around Harriet, but Scotty is completely off the reservation. That's saying a lot for a man who literally sings the praises of morning bowel movements.
Chapter 9. Scotty Sphincter.
How's this for irony? I just bought a goddamn Jeep from Drew Compton to give to his illegitimate son, Brandon. Stephen Finch, my wake and bake assistant, convinced me I needed to lay down a respectable amount of cash in order to get to Drew. I'm so strapped now, I had to siphon money from Brandon's college savings account to pay for it. Given Brandon's lack of interest in academics, he'd no doubt approve of my decision, especially when he lays eyes on this Jeep. We got it fully loaded, white person pimped from top to bottom. Stephen, of course, was the one who finagled the deal. Drew doesn't know I'm back in Hartford living in the McMansion. Neither does our son, Brandon. That's another thing I'm sweating these days. The bottom is falling out of the housing market, and I've got a gaudy nightmare worth more than $1 million. My ex-wife was in such a hurry to liquidate, she failed to do even simple upkeep. The house itself is solid, but it sat empty for so many months it needs a lot of work. That's not really my area of expertise, so I'm doling out even more to have the place repaired and repainted. Adding insult to injury, Steven is my new roomie. I don't let him blow bong hits in the house, so he's turned the pool shed into a stoner man cave. The tour is going all right, but we're obscenely over budget. Like my bandmates, Gaseous Iglesias and Slick Von Schlopp, I consider myself to be a holistic specialist, the emphasis being on whole. We've never half-assed anything, not medical school, not our surgery practices, and certainly not our music. We headline both nights of Rectal Fest, putting on a rip-roaring, special effects, scream bonanza for both shows. There is no way we would ever serve sludgy, leftover tunes during the second night of Rectal Fest. If anything, we strive to out-yodel the previous night's performance. This means two different stages, two different acts, and countless costume changes. Everything we do costs a fortune. For example, we have an animation expert on the payroll just for the sake of one tune, Mudflap Boogie. Our tech created a 3D simulated model of a plus-size rear end which floats over the audience during the song. Towards the end, the big brown pucker attached to this graphic image lets out a crisp oinker of a fart. It is truly disgusting. Our fans love it. Prior to the release of our fourth album, Love and Life on Uranus, we really had to work to fill our time on stage. We'd do lots of headbanging solos, eating up the clock so our fans wouldn't notice we only had 3 CDs worth of original tunes spread over a two-night gig. Sometimes, we'd test new songs, although that didn't always work out so well. I tried to Taylor Swift Colette with a song called Inappropriate Yearnings, which detailed her pornographic, pedophilia-tainted tendencies. I have to give fans of the Rectal Surgeons a little credit here. Yes, they were completely repulsed, but not in a good way. When it comes to children, even these people have higher standards than Colette. Gaseous, Slick, and myself are what you call accidental rock stars. Med school was so fucking serious. We needed somewhere to put all that relentless stress. Our songs detailed fairly ordinary stuff, at least in terms of surgical practices dealing with the colon. We made things sound so deliciously icky, people couldn't resist it. Even today, we really do appeal to people's lowest sense of humor. Bottom dwellers, if you will. In real life, I'm able to keep a fairly low profile. Images of the men behind the masks have been plastered all over social media, but it really hasn't affected me much. I'm so ordinary looking, most people wouldn't recognize me if I was in the same room looking up their rear ends. And that's the other thing. If you want to spend time with me, you're going to have to pull your pants down. I suspect you aren't going to enjoy the kind of examination I'm going to give you, no matter how much you may like my music. I've yet to find a person willing to prep for a colonoscopy just to get my John Hancock on a prescription slip. No matter how you slice it, none of the Rectal Surgeons are actual celebrities. Thinking about the staggering cost of the tour keeps my scrotum permanently clenched. That's where my work as a doctor comes in handy. Seeing patients at my old clinic in Hartford keeps the lights on at the McMansion and lessens the amount of time I have for stressing out. This sucky situation would be a whole lot easier if I could be with Blue. The distance from her physically hurts. I'm developing carnal tunnel syndrome from spending too many nights alone. I was able to release a little pressure from the old sperm tank during Father's Day weekend. Taj's dad, Tom, went to Gecko's Gulch, so Blue was able to sneak off and meet me in Philadelphia. We were hosting Rectal Fest at the Omni Dome, but other than sound checks and live performances, Blue and I spent most of that time holed up in a hotel near the airport. We had the hottest sex ever. It's precisely this sort of thing which makes me want to hold off having any more kids. Not that I wouldn't love to have some with Blue. I just need her to myself for a while. Plus, I've got to get a grip on my finances before I bring home another mouth to feed. Skulking around behind Blue's back is not the way I wanted to start my marriage. I tell myself it wouldn't do Blue any good to know our finances are as solid as a spaghetti strainer. Blue's got plenty on her plate this summer just dealing with Brandon. The fact that she hasn't reported any problems makes me wonder if she isn't hiding some things herself. There are times when being around Brandon is about as much fun as walking on thumbtacks. I've tried probing Blue on this issue, but she keeps telling me the boys are having a great summer. No one has landed in the slammer, the house hasn't been set on fire, and both boys still have all their appendages. What was there to worry about? With Brandon? Plenty. Just to be a cool stepmom, Blue has been teaching Brandon and Taj how to drive this summer. Brandon gets his learner's permit next year, which scares me to the core. The Jeep is way too nice for a first-time driver, but in this case, Brandon genuinely deserves it. His real father is such a leaky douche.
Hang tight, kiddies. We'll be back in a scratch. What happens when cosmetics and polygamy collide? Find out in Quirky Killers by Adele Park. Take a trip to quirky polygamist country, where one of the local brides is just itching to get her husbands to heaven in a hurry. Quirky Killers, get it today on audible.com. You'll die laughing.
You know the expression? Cats have nine lives. Well, what if you can give them one more? The Give Them 10 movement is on a mission to help give cats an extra life. How? With spay and neuter. Spaying or neutering your cat helps them live a longer, healthier life. And it helps control free-roaming cat populations too. Learn more about the benefits of spay and neuter and meet Scooter, the neutered cat, at givethem10.org. That's givethem10.org.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
We now return to more of Quirky Cat Goes Splat by Adele Park on Pet Life Radio.
Steven took his time buying the Jeep, stringing Drew along with high-grade pharmaceuticals. I knew he'd ask for them. At my behest, Steven kept his organics, like pot and peyote, to himself. I don't understand these drugs. Their unpredictability makes me nervous. Best to stick with what I know. I made sure Drew got every top-of-the-line goody he wanted. Steven's job was to get a read on Drew's motives. I wanted to know if Drew was interested in meeting Brandon, or if he just wanted to stroke his own ego by going on celebrity cougars. By the time the deal on the Jeep closed, Steven and Drew were already at the "I love you, man" stage of their relationship. When I was in med school, I experimented with practically every pharmaceutical ever made. Most of it was professional curiosity, a passion I shared with Gaseous Iglesias and Slick Bon Schlopp. We were very scientific about our approach to all this drug dabbling, dutifully monitoring heart rate, blood pressure, and side effects. Mostly what we got from all this was a lot of embarrassing overshares and diamond-hard stools. That, and the knowledge of what the good stuff actually is. Most pill junkies are shockingly ill-informed about what it takes to get truly sozzled. Today, a lot of my practice involves shoveling out the coal holes of such unenlightened druggies. You cannot believe the kind of granite-hard gunk I've drilled out from the business end of these people. Thanks to such nuggers, I've never had to warn my kids about pills. What I've done instead is show them photos from work, pretending I'm doing it for the ew factor, knowing how much my kids like super gross stuff. Even my ex-wife, Colette, won't touch pills. This makes her behavior all the more disturbing, given that she's of supposed sound mind when she pulls these tacky, underage sex stunts. One thing that is going my way is the fact that they've run into funding problems for Celebrity Cougars. They're on hiatus from shooting while the producers scramble for money. Colette managed to make it onto the pilot show, parading around Hunter Radosovich, the teenager she was bawling from Brandon's old high school. He's an adult now, so there's little chance Colette will ever face charges for sexual abuse. These two carried on for a year after I split with Colette. I've heard through the grapevine that Hunter has decided he doesn't need a mommy anymore and is now bopping squiddles with college co-eds. They faked the whole scene they shot for Celebrity Cougars. What worries me is having those appalling porn pics of Colette resurface in the public arena. She's got Hunter's lacrosse stick heading straight up her wang. All I can think of when I see it is a leather-covered petri dish. Hunter had his grimy hands all over that thing, and Colette wanted to use it like a dildo? I'm all for sexual exploration, but that's just nasty. I'm not sure when Colette developed a taste for young blood. Colette and Drew Compton were high school heartthrobs, stereotypically good-looking all-Americans. Everyone, including Colette, thought they were destined for each other. By the time Colette discovered Drew had left a bat in her cave, he was already engaged to marry Belinda Wilkerson. I didn't know Colette was pregnant that crazy Christmas vacation when I relentlessly banged her in my parents' basement like a Christmas Story marathon on TBS. I was such a naive nabob. I fell right into Colette's honey trap, never bothering to question why a girl who didn't even acknowledge my existence in high school was suddenly eager to ride my flagpole for 3 non-stop days and nights. Despite my stupidity, I was happy to get Brandon, no matter who the sperm donor was. I wasn't very far into my marriage before I woke up and realized Colette was never going to be in love with a surgical galoot like me. As long as she continued granting me access to her magnificent assets, I was okay with that. In exchange, Colette got to spend money like a sultan, while I politely ignored the fact that she was once again glazing Drew's donut. It all worked out, for a while, anyway. Then Colette decided to do that snatchy thing with Hunter's scuzzy lacrosse stick. Colette thinks Celebrity Cougars is her best chance to be relevant again. This situation is so pathetic. Her only ace is to delegitimize me as Brandon's father. Nice. Drew Compton isn't an obvious asshole. Rather than claiming Colette as his trophy wife, Drew made the curious decision to pursue Belinda Wilkerson, a studious and mild-mannered girl he met during the one semester he went to college. Drew's higher education ended when a Samoan linebacker topped a dog pile he was under, causing his fibula to snap like a number 2 pencil. Belinda stayed in school, eventually becoming a surgical nurse. Drew and Belinda held off having children during the early years of their marriage. Drew went to work selling cars, moving around from one dealership to the next. Somehow, Drew was able to hang on to his hair as well as his athletic body type. Women have the most influence when it comes to buying cars, a fact that Drew exploits with amazing expertise. As a result, Drew has managed to make a decent amount of money. It's not enough to attract the likes of Colette, however. She's grown accustomed to a rectal surgeon-sized bank account. I think Colette was in love with the teenage version of Drew. And while Drew never really grew up, he did get older, which is why Colette seems to have lost her infatuation with him. Or maybe the whole affair was just a way for Colette to secretly punish Belinda for marrying Drew. Whatever the case, in Colette's mind, Drew is nothing now but a drooling, geriatric cooter shooter Her only interest in him concerns the buzz it will create if the producers of Celebrity Cougars are able to prove Brandon doesn't have the rock star lineage he was hoping for. There doesn't seem to be any love lost for Colette on Drew's part either, but he's got a real fixation with Belinda. He relentlessly rants about her during his late nights with Stephen. I remember when Belinda finally had the courage to leave this spineless rhino. A few months before Colette's teenage sex scandal, Belinda had come into the clinic with an anal tear so long it looked like she'd pooped a watermelon. I had worked with Belinda at one of the area hospitals, so she felt safe coming to see me. At this point in the marriage, Belinda had two little girls, both under the age of 3. It took a court order to protect Belinda from this raging violator. Drew's side of the story, drunkenly told to Stephen Finch, was that Belinda was a money-grubbing whore. Interesting. And Colette isn't? I happen to know for a fact that Belinda is a hard-working, competent, and compassionate surgical nurse. She's soft-spoken, but often funny and always kind. Stephen was able to find out that Drew dutifully picks up his daughters every week. He doesn't care about being a good father. He just likes the opportunity to needle Belinda. I had a sizable panic attack when I ran into Belinda at Hartford Township Hospital. I had limited my practice this summer to procedures that could be done in-house at my old clinic. I wasn't keen on having many people know I was back in Hartford, especially Belinda. A 3-car pileup sent me to Hartford Township to perform a complex surgery on a young boy whose organs were badly mangled. I had no idea Belinda worked there. I'd always seen her at Mercy Medical. I didn't want to explain to Belinda why I was back in town, and I really didn't want her mentioning it to Drew. Under different circumstances, I'd consider introducing Belinda to Tom Wakefield. Now that Dana has come clean about her affair, I've learned quite a few shocking details about the Wakefields' marriage. Blue says the reason Dana went on that final hunger strike in Africa was because her married boyfriend ended their fling. Dana had been operating on the assumption they would both leave their spouses and start a new life together. Even being hospitalized wasn't enough to bring Romeo back. Dana is seeking treatment in New York, hoping he'll change his mind. Let me know how that works out, sweetheart. As someone who has been cheated on numerous times, I don't have a lot of sympathy for Dana. She's been nice to me, but Dana dumped Tom like a bag of soiled laundry. Tom hasn't had a perfect past either, but he's always been faithful to Dana. I get that people fall out of love or were never in it to begin with. It's the whole overlapping thing I find so distasteful. It's a simple matter of respect. I'll cop to wanting to stick it to Drew for doing the dipsy doodle with my then-wife Colette. Mostly, though, my motivation is to keep him away from Brandon. That kid has enough problems without falling under the influence of this box of rocks. The bad news is, Stephen hasn't delivered quite the goods I was hoping for. The good news is, he had a better idea, one that involved Nancy Neptune. The plan is to have Nancy zip in here, get Drew blitzed, and encourage him to brag about how he's going to be the next big reality TV star. Just because Colette landed on Celebrity Cougars doesn't mean they'll hire this lunkhead. He needs an audition tape. If we can get this hoser to spew a bunch of crazy stuff on video, maybe the court will recognize Drew isn't fit to care for a gerbil, let alone a temperamental teenage boy. I have no doubt Nancy will oblige. She seems to be game for anything that dances on the edge of bad behavior. Plus, I'm willing to cough up backstage passes to the Rectal Fest Splashdown in New York City for Nancy to give away on the radio. It seemed like a win-win situation for everyone but that ass-muncher Drew Compton. Stephen has been trying to bag Nancy for years. Now that I'm married to Blue and Stephen is single, maybe she'll be open to the idea. It makes no difference to me, but it would cause Blue, on the other hand, to have a 5-star freakout. Hopefully she'll never know.
What happens when cats and ghosts collide? Find out in Quirky Cat Gets Ghosted by Adele Park. This quirky tale is narrated by the ever-so-snarky Skitters the Cat. Skitters finds himself in the most unfortunate position of having to help his nemesis, Blue McKenna, go to heaven, hell, or somewhere other than where he is. Otherwise, Blue will continue to bug Skitters as much in death as she did in life. Quirky Cat Gets Ghosted is a frightfully fun prance through the desert. Quirky Cat Gets Ghosted. Get ghosted today on Audible, Downpour, and Spotify. Meow, kitties.
Let's Talk Pets. Every week on demand. Only on PetLifeRadio.com.